morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. An emergency homeless shelter in Kalispell closed, anti-racist action in Bozeman, and how Montana firefighters plan to simultaneously combat wildfires and the spread of coronavirus. It's Monday, June 15th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. State agencies have spent a sliver of the $1.25 billion in federal coronavirus relief funds at Montana's disposal. Kevin Trevelin reports.
State agencies have spent roughly $24 million in federal CARES Act relief funds, about 19% of what the governor's office has appropriated so far. That money goes toward business stabilization grants, housing assistance, social service nonprofits, and other expenditures. Chris Wilkinson with the Legislative Fiscal Division told the Legislative Finance Committee on Friday that most of the CARES Act spending occurred in June.
But I would let you know that this is a fluid situation.
Also on Friday, Bozeman City officials sent a letter to Governor Steve Bullock requesting additional CARES Act funding, $50 million, for child care providers. State GOP leadership is pushing for faster distribution of federal funds to spur a quicker economic recovery. Tom Livers, budget director for the governor's office, told the Legislative Finance Committee that more discussions are needed to navigate potential gray areas and identify what kind of spending falls under the CARES Act umbrella. State agencies have spent an additional $18 million in non-CARES Act federal coronavirus relief funding to date. A Legislative Fiscal Division report released Friday says Montanans have also received $252 million in federal pandemic unemployment compensation. The program, which provides $600 weekly payments, is set to expire July 31st. Kevin Trevelin, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Kevin Trevelin is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America State House reporter. The Montana Health Department reported more than 30 new cases of COVID-19 in Montana over the weekend. New cases were reported in Cascade, Lewis and Clark, Missoula, Ravalli, Flathead, Lake, Custer, Bighorn, and Gallatin counties. There are a total of more than 70 active cases in Montana. On Saturday, Bighorn County announced a man in his 80s died from COVID-19. It's the second death attributed to the virus in the county and the 19th in the state. Services for homeless people in the Flathead Valley that ramped up during Montana's stay-at-home order are now winding down as the state reopens. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports an emergency homeless shelter in Kalispell closed down Friday.
We do have three levels of what we do here.
Chris Krager is the executive director of the Samaritan House in Kalispell, a local homeless shelter. Last week, he showed me the building that houses the nonprofit's administrative offices and a daytime cafeteria, which was converted into a 20-bed dormitory in March when cases of COVID-19 began to show up in Montana.
And it is just our Gen Pop shelter-in-place shelter. We have another area I'll show you that is for quarantine if anybody's not feeling well or...
When cases began to pop up in Flathead County, public health officials and community organizations worried about the potential for an unchecked outbreak within the local homeless population around Kalispell. Krager says little over a half of the roughly 200 homeless people counted in an annual survey last year were sleeping outside in tents and possibly in communal camps where the virus could spread quickly.
So it's sort of, in the context of the pandemic, makes it a little more serious when there really is nowhere for them to go get services and everything's shut down.
Krager says the lack of services for those living outside also increased demand for temporary shelter. Samaritan House and a number of local community organizations worked with city and county officials to identify an adequate shelter and to waive some ordinances in order to stand up the project. It served about 70 people over the last 3 months, allowing them to shelter in place, but also provided access to medical services, including COVID-19 testing from the Flathead Community Health Center. 52-year-old Leonard Tyree stayed there after he was released from prison in Deer Lodge on March 9th.
I thought straight up it was just going to be hard. I would have to do what I had to do to survive. And Someone told me about this place, and I'm glad I showed up.
It not only gave Tyree a safe place to stay, but he was also able to get his diabetes under control. The shelter shut down Friday, and Tyree plans to go to Libby to take care of his parents. Krager says organizers chose to close down the temporary shelter now because more jobs and community services are becoming available since Montana moved into phase two of its economic reopening plan June 1st. About a third of those who use the shelter found other housing, and the remainder can stay at the Samaritan House's regular homeless shelter down the street. Organizers say the Samaritan House will allow people to stay connected to local health care services, including COVID-19 testing. Kyle Waterman sits on the Kalispell City Council and the Flathead City County Health Board and is running for state senate. He helped spearhead the emergency shelter and says the strategy for a possible second wave of COVID-19 is still being hashed out.
I know we're having the debrief. The health center is actually the ones who are sort of organizing some of that debrief so that there is a plan, so that there is a community plan going forward in through the summer. In the fall, and where, how we would have a sort of call to action if there was a spike that we're seeing, and what we would do again.
Waterman and others were able to raise roughly $100,000 to set up the expanded shelter for homeless people during the state's economic shutdown. That paid for 24-hour staffing over the last few months. He says money was set aside so another shelter could quickly be set up if more housing was needed. Now that the state is reopening, Waterman says organizers are sharing information with people without homes about the signs and symptoms of COVID-19 and when and where they can access testing. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Organizers in Bozeman are calling for more support for Black students at Montana's largest university and for businesses to commit to anti-racist policies. Rachel Kramer reports one organization is gearing up to offer workshops on understanding race.
Jessica Brito with the Montana State University Black Student Union said her organization is advocating for three main changes on campus. She said she's excited that the Liberal Studies program will offer Introduction to Africana Studies for the first time this fall. But she said the Black Student Union wants to see more classes specifically about Africa and African American history and culture.
Latinx students, Native students, Asian students, LGBTQ students, and women also all have like programs and classes, which is incredible, and we're very glad for those folks who we partner with. But unfortunately, we seem to be lacking.
Brito said the second change the Black Student Union wants to see is a designated go-to person to report experiences of harassment or find support. The third request is having a designated space for Black students to come together to share their experiences and feel supported. MSU spokesperson Tracy Ellig tells YPR the university will look at what space is available for all student clubs on campus and the possibility of adding more courses. Ellig said the university already has mechanisms to report harassment, but added the administration would have more conversations with students regarding specific support. Terry Bradley with Bozeman United for Racial Justice said 57 local businesses have signed what his organization calls freedom pledges, including hiring practices and customer community relationships.
Accepting feedback from BIPOC community members, institutionalizing staff trainings, conflict mediation, bystander intervention, things like that, and then support ongoing work for racial justice in Bozeman.
Bradley said support could be financial or offering space for events. Judith Heilman with the Montana Racial Equity Project said her organization will be starting up more workshops and trainings when they have capacity and can figure out how to offer them safely during COVID-19.
We have workshops, Ending Bias, Bigotry, and Racism, Skills and Strategies You Can Use, which is an 8-hour workshop, and also how to talk with kids about race, not to kids about race.
With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
The U.S. Agriculture Secretary visited Montana Friday to announce a blueprint to prioritize work for the U.S. Forest Service. Supporters say it will modernize the agency and cut unnecessary red tape. Opponents, however, counter it will undermine the nation's laws aimed at protecting the environment. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue says the Forest Service has metaphorically been bound in bubble wrap for far too long.
We kind of came paralyzed about a lot of the things that we needed to do.
Moments later at Missoula's Aerial Fire Depot and Smoke Jumper Center, Perdue signed the memorandum outlining the Trump administration's new priority list for Forest Service work. That list includes speeding up environmental impact reviews done for proposed projects under the National Environmental Policy Act.
We got forest plans that are 15 years long, and I think we can do this in 2 years.
The memo also calls for making it easier to get permits for recreational activities in national forests and grasslands. It extends grazing permits and expedites mining, logging, and drilling projects, and expands broadband service on national forest lands. The secretarial memorandum has the support of the Republican members of Montana's congressional delegation, U.S. Senator Steve Daines, who's seeking re-election, and Congressman Greg Gianforte, who's running for governor. Gianforte says this policy shift will
improve our forest health, reduce the severity of wildfires, and improve wildlife habitat.
Missoula-based Wild Earth Guardians, which has a history of filing court challenges on proposed Forest Service work citing environmental concerns, describes the policy list as a gut punch that destroys the fabric of the nation's environmental safety net. Democratic U.S. Senator John Tester said in a statement that Montanans know reasonable forest management is critical to economies and ecosystems across the state. Democratic Governor Steve Bullock's office did not directly respond to the memo when asked for a comment, and a spokesperson said the governor's staff is still reviewing the policy. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
24 houses south of Helena were evacuated this weekend as a wildland fire in Jefferson County quickly grew to 1,500 acres. The Lump Gulch fire near Clancy claimed 2 outbuildings. Responding departments are unaware of other structural losses. Mandatory evacuation orders were lifted yesterday. The Lewis and Clark Sheriff's Office has issued pre-evacuation orders to several neighborhoods. A Type 3 incident management team took control of the Lump Gulch fire yesterday, and some 150 personnel are assigned to the fire with ground and aerial resources. NCWEB lists the fire at 15% contained. The cause of the Lump Gulch fire remains under investigation. The Lump Gulch fire south of Helena kicked off Montana's fire season this past weekend. This year, many of the strategies fire crews use to protect property and resources will look different, as firefighters also try to protect themselves from the COVID-19 illness. Morgan Levy interviewed 2 Type 1 fire incident commanders about how new COVID-19 protocols will play out in the Northern Rockies.
Like everything else in 2020, fighting wildfires is going to look a little different this year. But the reality is that COVID-19 guidelines for the general public, like wearing a face covering and staying 6 feet away from people when out of the house, are nearly impossible to follow when you're fighting fire.
Masks are really, really hard to wear.
That's Greg Ponson. He works for the DNRC and is also a deputy incident commander in the Northern Rockies. I spoke with Ponson over Zoom. When you're digging a trench on the edge of a burning forest, it's hard to breathe if you're wearing a mask. He says agencies will encourage firefighters to at least wear a bandana over their face. Agencies have adapted other guidelines as well for fire season and outlined them in 900-plus page wildfire response plans, modified for specific regions across the U.S. For starters, all seasonal workers were quarantined for 14 days upon hiring. Firefighters are required to complete daily health checks to rule out any possible symptoms or exposure potential. And there's been a greater reliance on technology. Some trainings were conducted online, and communication with the public this year will happen through virtual meetings and emails. Ponson says one of the biggest changes will be a system called Module as One, which will keep small crews of firefighters isolated together through a season to limit their exposure to others.
It was recognized early on that firefighting is not going to allow for 6-foot social distancing at all times.
And this system is going to drastically impact fire camps. Ponson was the incident commander for the 2017 Lolo fires and is used to overseeing camps that house hundreds of firefighters and a revolving support staff that includes meteorologists, cooks, and medics. The tight-knit camps are well known for spreading disease. Camp crud is a common respiratory illness that often infects a sizable portion of the population.
Fire camps are kind of a special concern because they're famous for being a breeding ground for contagion. It's hard to be in a fire camp under any circumstances and not come away with the fire camp crud.
Often situated on places like fairgrounds, fire camps are heavily reliant on the local community for medical attention if someone gets seriously injured or sick, additional food, and contract staff that works in rotating shifts, but not this year.
It's essentially taking that camp and figuring out how we spread it out across the incident.
That's Mike Okachia, the fire incident commander for one of two Type 1 teams in the Northern Rockies. He says this year, camps will look similar to decentralized hunting camps. Modules of firefighters will sleep, eat, and bathe in isolated sites around a fire. That means no tightly packed group briefings and individually packaged meals. Participation in an incident management team is voluntary, and a lot of members are late in their career and thus more vulnerable to infection. So to relieve health concerns and promote attendance, agencies are examining which positions could be moved off-site entirely to an office.
Could you actually still function and support a team working virtually from home? And I think that's the piece that remains to be seen, how that will play out.
Both Gokachia and Ponson say the key will be to rely on local public health officials in the counties where a fire is taking place. Ponson.
To either embed or hire them as a technical specialist to help us navigate the protocols that they would like to see in place so that this incident where we bring in all of these people from outside don't represent some kind of new threat of infection for them.
Protecting firefighters and communities goes beyond the local level, though. Incident management teams and firefighters are often asked to travel across state lines. Again, Ponson.
We're committed, I think, as a wildland fire community to sending help where it's needed. But there are some concerns about how do we bring those firefighters back into their home unit once they have, you know, gone somewhere where COVID is much more prevalent.
Montana has one of the lowest infection rates in the country, and state agencies are committed to keeping it that way. Because the Northern Rockies fire season tends to happen after the rest of the country, fire managers can learn how COVID-19 protocols work elsewhere. Like Florida, where, according to Gokachia, right now, out-of-state incident teams are being tested before leaving a fire. The hope is that if Northern Rockies personnel are sent elsewhere, they'll be tested before returning home. The disadvantage is that out-of-state resources may be strapped by the time fire season happens here. But both Gokachia and Ponson say this is true every year in the Northern Rockies. The state will just need to be strategic in using its local resources, including $55 million banked in the state fire fund.
It is going to rely on us being really effective in initial attack, keeping fires small where it doesn't result in a huge sink of firefighting resources.
The wildfire response plan puts a lot of emphasis on initial attack of fires, but Ponson says this is always the strategy in the front country, where structures and personal properties are threatened. But in the back country, fires can start in tricky locations, like steep mountainsides and densely vegetated areas. So sometimes fire managers wait to tackle fires until they're in more favorable ground, which can lead to a bigger fire.
It's not necessarily business as usual in terms of the consequences if we lose an initial attack, that now we're going to have to rely on taking resources away from initial attacking other fires, or we're going to need more resources from outside the geographic area, which may or may not be there.
And this will likely mean a greater reliance on aviation resources, which Gokachia says will be readily available this season. But this gets tricky too. Personnel in smoke jumper planes and helicopters will be required to wear N95 masks, and the number of people on board will be limited. Helicopter managers will not be sitting in the front seat, so there will be additional duties for the pilot, like operating GPS and changing radio frequencies. It also means one less pair of eyes to watch for hazards. In the end, no wildfire season is the same, so agencies are going to need to adapt quickly to a constantly changing situation, both in terms of fires and COVID-19. But the goal is the same as any other year. Fight fires safely.
We're just starting to implement a lot of these practices that none of us have experience with, but eventually they're going to have to feel normal so they're not a distraction from the primary job that we're being asked to do, and that's fight fire.
In Missoula, I'm Morgan Levy for Yellowstone Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for You Early Birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.